Hi, and welcome to the Group X-Files. This is the podcast for demystifying the secrets of becoming a successful group exercise instructor. I'm your host, Sarah Keller, and I can't wait to share with you the two decades of experience I have and what that's taught me in terms of leading thriving and full group exercise classes. Welcome to episode 4, Creating a Workout Skeleton. In today's episode, we're going to talk about how to give yourself a template, a framework, a skeleton, whatever you'd like to call it, so that you can be more creative with what goes inside of that template for each class to make those classes that much more impactful. All right, friends, I am super excited to bring you today's episode on creating a workout skeleton. And yes, we're not even a spooky season and we're already talking about skeletons. However, when we're talking about this skeleton, it's really what serves as a framework or a template for freestyle classes that you teach. This skeleton really does wonders for freeing up your creativity in terms of the choreography you fill the class with. So what do I mean by this? For example, I could tell you that every single bar class I teach, we start with a standing warm-up. From that standing warm-up, depending on which format of bar I'm teaching, we either go into interval work for 12 minutes, and that interval work is always going to be 4 different moves or compound moves, each done 45 seconds with 15 seconds to transition and rest, and we do those 4 moves a total of 3 times. If I'm not doing the circuit version of my bar class, it's going to be standing upper body strength work with a little bit of lower body mixed in. From that point, regardless of my bar format, we're going to the mat. We're going to do either seated or laying core work or glute work while we're on the mat. From the mat, we head to the bar and we spend our big chunk of time at the bar doing glutes, doing thigh work, etc., all your traditional bar work. After that, 90% of the time, I bring them back to the mat to finish with some sort of core work or glute work, depending on what we have done at the bar already, and a quick stretch, and they're out the door. Without fail, every bar class I teach, same skeleton. Teach an aqua class. We're going to start with our warm-up. If it's a shallow water aqua class, I tend to structure it in timed intervals. So our first chunk of intervals, I'm going to give them 4 different moves. They're going to do those for a set amount of time and have a set amount of recovery. We repeat that series 2 to 3 times, depending on the workout I have at hand. If I'm at a pool that the shallow lanes go the full length of the pool, the next set of the class is going to be full length pool work. They might run up the length of the pool and they might swim back. They might swim up the pool, run back. They might side shuffle, grapevine, whatever it is. But they're going to use the length of that pool. Then we'll come back to some more stationary work for intervals again. Then we'll hit some core work in the pool. It might be using the walls of the pool. It might be using noodles, but there's going to be some core work. And then we finish with a cardio blast set at the end. And then a nice little cool down, quick little stretch, and they're out. If I'm teaching a core class, we're going to start with a warm-up, generally laying on the floor. Get our core pieces warmed up, right? So we know it's not just abs. We don't just do crunches or stabilization, right? But we want to certainly find those muscles and activate them throughout the front of our core, throughout the back of our core. I always have a portion of standing work in a core class. It's not just laying on the floor or being on all fours, right? Core work is dynamic and you do some of that standing. So the next chunk of class after we do the warm-up and do some basic activation work, stabilization work on the floor, we're up on our feet doing dynamic core work. We will always return to the mat and do some rotational core work to complement the standing work before we finish things off. And we could go through any type of format of class here. I'd say spin is the one format that probably doesn't have so much of a skeleton because there is not the same variety of movement in a spin class, right? You're on a bike. The whole class, you're on a bike. Unless it's some sort of bike boot camp or something where you might get off the bike and do some strength training sets in between interval sets on the bike. But in a traditional bike class, you're on the bike. You're standing, you're seated, you're maybe climbing, you're maybe riding a flat, but you're on a bike the whole time. So we don't need that same kind of skeleton structure in order to unleash creativity in spin class. So we'll talk about spin a little bit later in this chat today. But if you look at even the pre-choreographed formats that come out, they are structured. If you look at a Les Mills body combat release, you know you're going to have your warm-up. You know then you're going to have combat track one. You're going to have a power track. You're going to have combat track two, et cetera, et cetera. You're going to have your Muay Thai track. Follows the same format. Body pump, you're always going to have the warm-up followed by this piece of strength, followed by that piece of strength. It's a structured format. And having that structured format does create a little bit of predictability for our participants, which can be really great. And I know some people say, well, that's why my participants don't like, say, a Les Mills or pre-choreographed class, is because they like the freedom of when I create things. And that's fantastic. We love creativity. And I gather there's a bunch of us as group exercise instructors who wish we could just do this all day, every day, just like the people that create for the pre-choreographed programs. It would be amazing. It might be our dream job. Or it might not be. In which case, the skeleton helps you even more, because once you find that basic structure that works for you, you've got the freedom to create within that structure. Maybe you're teaching a freestyle, like full body strength class. It might make sense to have that skeleton nonetheless, and you know that you're going to do this type of work, then this type of work, then this type of work. But within that, you've got the freedom of choice. Are they doing it with dumbbells? Are they doing it with a barbell, a body bar? Are they doing it with some sort of resistance bands? Are they doing it with body weight? And what type of movement are they doing? Because if we're working upper body, well, there's so much upper body work to be done. So there is still a lot of creativity within that skeleton. But having those initial kind of boundaries and framework does help to kind of put some parameters around what you're doing, right? When I sit there to think of what am I doing for my next bar class, right? I get a jamming playlist, put that playlist together. I'm a huge sucker for making playlists, and I made the mistake of trying to organize my Spotify into folders based on the formats that I teach. And then realized how many playlists I actually had and was a little bit jaw to the floor over that. But that's a whole different discussion. We'll talk about music another day. Right now, right as we're talking about these skeletons, these templates that we create for ourselves, right? So I know I'm going to have a standing warm-up. I've got a song. I listen to that song. I get the beat of that song. I know what I'm going to do. Am I going to do some wide plie squats? Am I going to do some releve work? Am I going to do some high knee marches? You know, and also, how is that work going to help us be ready for the rest of class? So sometimes the warm-up might not be the first thing that you plan. You know it's going to be there and you've got a jam and song for it. You say, okay, well, I kind of need to see what I'm going to do in the meat of my class because it would make sense. Just like, so side note, I used to teach college English and it was a lot of composition and people would come to me struggling to write their introduction, but they hadn't written the rest of the paper yet. So it's hard to introduce something when you actually don't know what you're introducing, right? So maybe you need the meat of your class before you get to the warm-up. The warm-up might be the last thing that you actually put together for that class, right? So past my warm-up, I've got my interval section in the most popular bar class that I teach. We do these intervals. So I say, okay, what four moves do I want to do? And in these four moves, my members have a lot of autonomy. I give them a basic move. And then each of the rounds that we work, I give them options to make it more challenging, but also options to kind of change it up a little bit within the scope of that movement. That way, they can move in a way that suits their body and that feels good to them and that gives them a little bit of pleasure in that moment, makes them smile a little bit, right? So it could be a combination of cardio and strength training throughout these four intervals. On the cardio intervals, I like to make sure they get some forward movement, some backward movement, and some lateral movement because we don't get enough lateral movement in our day-to-day, generally speaking. So maybe if I'm having them go forward and back, it could be as simple as run three steps forward, run three steps back. And that might be their basic for the first round. And it could be a walk instead of a run. Some people show up to bar and they're like, I didn't know I was doing cardio. This is bar class. Why am I doing cardio? So maybe they walk forward and walk back. But then maybe the next time I encourage them to skip. Number one, it's a little bit of impact on their body. And we all know that we need impact on our bodies to help with our bone health, especially women as we age. But have you ever skipped and not smiled, like, just go skip real quick. You're going to smile when you skip. So it brings you a little bit of joy. Maybe in the third round, I encourage them to hop. 2 foot hop forward, 2 foot hop back. And they don't have to do the same thing forward and back. Maybe they hop forward and walk or run backwards. Doesn't make a bit of difference, but it provides them a little bit of autonomy. They can choose something that feels right for their body in that moment. And then they feel like they've got a little bit of control over the workout. Like, yes, I'm there to give them the framework and to say, hey, you're going to work out, because let's face it, if we weren't there to give them a workout, they might not do the workout. And that's why they come to our classes, right? We'll talk about autonomy and creating that autonomy for our members on another episode. But the biggest fear that I find is people are like, well, if I teach my participants how to do these things, they don't need me anymore. And that's just call it what it is. It's flat out wrong, right? Our members come to us because they need us one way or another. They don't have the space at home. They don't have the equipment at home. They don't want to find the music. They don't want to put together the moves, or they like being in a group of people. Nothing wrong with that, right? It's just as much social and mental as it is physical. And that's a huge part of group exercise and the community that we create. And that's one of the most fabulous things about group exercise. So don't be afraid to give them autonomy and let them be a little creative and let them move the way that their body wants to move, just because you're worried they're not going to come back to you. If anything, they might enjoy you more because they were able to move in a way that worked for their body and felt good for them and gave them a little bit of joy. So don't shy away from that, right? So we get through this interval section. Then after that, I know we're going to go to the mat. So on that mat, I know it's going to be some sort of glute and core work, depending on what I have that I might be planning at the bar for standing glute work. We may do a little floor work. We may do more seated glute work. Really depends on what I'm going to do at the bar. And then also same thing with the core work on the floor. It could be plank-based work. Heck, sometimes we even have push-ups built in. We might have posterior chain work because that is still part of our core. The core is not just our abs. No matter how many times I say the word core, we all think abs. But we all know it is not just our abs. And it may involve any sort of props that we have in the studio. I am grateful to have a whole array of props. I actually, around Christmas time every year, we do our 12 toys of Christmas in bar, where, granted, I count each weight that they have as a toy, but we bring out 12 different props for class, right? So my core work on the floor might use yoga blocks. It might use a Pilates ball. It could use a Pilates ring. It could use a small VersaLoop resistance band. It could use any sort of prop. It could use our weights, right? It all depends on what we're doing. But I know that I'm going to put together that section of core work on the floor. At that point of class, I know we're going to come up to the bar and get to the part that everyone's been dying to get to, no pun intended. And from there, we're going to do our standing thigh work. We're going to do our standing glute work. And I'm not going to lie, I'm not married to doing thigh work first, then glutes, or glutes, then thigh work. Part of it depends on the playlist I've put together. Part of it depends on how I've prepped them for that bar work with their floor work, with the warm-up. Again, complementing whatever I have planned at the bar. So not always planned first, but then planned to prep them nonetheless. And so we get at it at the bar. And it could be any combination of facing the bar work, side-facing work, facing away from the bar with our back on the bar work, right? If you teach bar, you know the options are limitless. Just like if you teach a strength training class or a cardio class, you know that within certain types of movement, you have quite a variety of what you could do for that segment of class. So even within yoga, right? In yoga, we still have the intention setting and meditation in the beginning of class. We have a warm-up in yoga. We have the building warmth part of yoga where you're prepping your body towards your peak pose. If you've planned a peak pose in class, then you're bringing them down from that. So even within all those segments, you've got so much room for flexibility depending on what the goal and intention you set for that practice, for that class are. So it's not limited to bar. It's not limited to aquatic classes, to strength, to yoga. This is any class that you can really create yourself a nice little structure for. So we're going to do our work at the bar. And 90% of the time, maybe even 95% of the time in my class, I'm going to bring them back to the mat for just a little bit of finishing core work. Why? Because I find it's just a nice way to finish things off. Sometimes I plan a longer core series the first time we're on the mat, so then we will finish our work at the bar and do a quick stretch at the bar at the end of class. But for the most part, we're coming back to our mat, do a short little finisher series. I'm talking like 2 minutes of just brutal, intense core work of whatever type. And then we get a nice little stretch at the end. And I always remind them that that stretch at the end is not going to make them suddenly a Gumby and super flexible, right? Just like strength is a practice, just like cardio is a practice, flexibility and mobility are also practices. And you don't get better at them by doing them for 2 to 3 minutes at the end of a class. Just like yoga or something else, you need to commit the time to it to get better at it. So we have this beautiful structure, and it really does allow our brains to run wild within it, right? I know a lot of us get on the socials and we follow certain creators or certain studios that we like to get new ideas from. And that's the beautiful thing about the age we live in, right? We've got the internet at our fingertips. It's super convenient and it really opens up doors that we hadn't thought of because A, some of us live in places that we can't conveniently go to other studios and take classes. B, we might not have the money or the time to do so, right? Our life circumstances are all different. So we might not have the opportunity to be able to go to other studios and take other classes from instructors. But we get to see all of this content online. And between what we come up with our own brains, between what we see these studios or these other instructors who we like to follow do, all of a sudden we just have this bank of information. Like, what do we do with all this information? Oh my gosh, I have so many ideas. I want to use all these ideas. And that can be really overwhelming if you're trying to build a class entirely from scratch every single time that you go in to teach, right? Because then you're like, oh, okay, well, I know I'm going to do a warm-up, right? We always do a warm-up. We always do a cool-down. Okay, I got bookends in my class. But that whole section in between, what are we doing? And if you're trying to reinvent that every time, you're spending so much time, you're spending so much brain space on it. That doesn't need to be done. And if you're going with the argument of, but they're going to get bored if we follow the same structure over and over. No, they're not. No, they're not. This bar class I've been running for the last 5 years following that same structure, and it's sold out every day. They're not going to get bored of the structure. Within that structure, you've got to keep them interested with the moves that you work in. But think about your favorite movie genre, right? Horror films tend to follow the same broad plot structure. Comedy films tend to, or your favorite TV show, right? If you follow a TV series, they generally kind of have the same plot structure episode over episode. It's just that the circumstances change. But these shows go on for season after season after season, and people keep tuning into them. So a formula does work, and it takes away some of the heavy lifting, so you're not planning completely from scratch every time. Now, I told you spin was a little bit different, because in spin, we are a little bit more limited in moves, and we could get into the whole choreographed spin versus traditional spin. Right, your soul cycle type ride where you're doing push-ups on the bike and you're doing shoulder taps and dips and hovers and whatever other things you're doing, right? Then I guess technically you have more choreography to work with, so to say. But I'm talking traditional spin class. You're on a bike and you're going to ride a bike. That's it. You're going to stand up sometimes. You're going to sit down sometimes. You're going to add gear. You're going to take gear away. But at the end of the day, you're pretty limited in terms of what you're doing on that bike. So a spin class certainly is a different animal and doesn't necessarily do well following a skeleton. There should still be some overarching theme or plan to that class, right? The ride should make sense and be cohesive in some way, whether that unifying theme is some sort of repeat interval set, whether it's a style of music or type, like maybe it's a decades ride where you've got a song from each decade since, I don't know, the 1950s or something. We just did one of those a few weeks ago, so that's fresh in my head. But there should be some sort of unifying theme to that spin class to make it feel whole, to make it feel cohesive and purposeful, even though it's not kind of following this structure of a skeleton. Now, that said, Les Mills has done a very good job with their RPM program of creating kind of a skeleton type structure for a spin class. And I know some people absolutely love that. They're RPM fanatics. They can't wait to catch the next RPM release. But at my club in particular, we have a lot of folks who just die over freestyle spin classes. They can't wait to see what the instructors come up with next. For better or for worse, right? But we've got an extremely competitive group of freestyle spin participants at our club, and they really force us to set the bar very high for them time and time again, and force us to really put on our creative thinking caps, which again leads me to another point about creating a skeleton for the formats you teach. And that's, if you're teaching a lot of formats, and you're trying to create a class from scratch every single time, whether that's once a week, whether you do the same class for 2 weeks, whether you do the same class for a month before you change. Hopefully you're not doing your class for more than a month. I'd argue 2 to 3 weeks is probably the max we should be doing any class. However, if you've got 6 different formats you're teaching, think about how much time a week you're spending reinventing the wheel if you're planning from scratch every time. Whereas if you just had that skeleton that you're working with, and yes, you still got to create a banging playlist, absolutely. You still got to pick, okay, well, for my upper body work, I want to do da-da-da, or for my thigh work at the bar, I want to do da-da-da, or for my up and down the pool work, I want to do da-da-da. But you've already got these basic elements in place ready to go for you so that you just kind of take a bank of things that fit from that area and plug them in a way that makes sense, in a way that's challenging, in a way that's engaging for your members. But then you're not bogged down in the, oh my gosh, where do I start? Because as freestyle instructors, there are a lot of, oh my gosh, where do I start moments, whether it's with your playlist, whether it's with the workout itself. So the fewer, oh my gosh, where do I start moments that we have, the quicker and more efficient we can put that workout together and feel good about it, feel confident about it. I could tell you I didn't feel confident teaching freestyle classes until I kind of figured this piece of it out for myself and then realized, oh, it does make my planning a lot easier. And then it also makes the remembering a lot easier, right? If you're a Les Mills instructor and you teach, say, body combat and body jam, I'm going to use them both as examples because I taught them both for years. Body combat. Very much a structured formula. You have this type of track, this type of track, this type of track, this type of track. Release after release. And of course they innovate over the years and things have kind of evolved. But then you get to an animal like body jam. I don't know how G does it. Well, it's his full-time job. So, you know, he's not being pulled in 20 different directions and doing this and doing that. That is his full-time job, is to create that program and create that choreography. But entirely different every time. Sure, there's a warm up. Sure, there's a cool down. There's usually a block one and a block two of some sort. But within those blocks, it could be entirely different. It could be street jazz. It could be Euro house. It could be like African influenced. It could be old school. It could be more Latin based. Who knows? So body jam is kind of one of those, it's pre-choreographed, yes. Does it have a skeleton? Not really. The wheels kind of come off with body jam and you're learning something new every time. But I know most of the body jam instructors that I talk to love learning it and they don't care, but it is the hardest program for them to learn because it's not like, oh, right, I've got this combat track for body combat. So I know it's going to have some upper body and lower body combinations put together in it. Great. And we know it's going to be some combination of our basic realm of punches and our basic realm of kicks. But body jam, it's just fair game. Like, it's just wild game. Like anything you pull, any type of movement you pull out of a hat is fair game for dance, right? So it's very overwhelming to learn. Now imagine being on the flip side and trying to create that kind of thing over and over. So I'd argue that if you taught a freestyle dance cardio class, you could even build yourself some sort of template and skeleton because it's overwhelming. And we've got enough to think about every time we show up to teach. We've got to know our music. We've got to know the choreography that we put together for our music. We've got to be present for our members. So be there early, say hi to them, answer any questions that they might have before class, get ourselves set up in our studio, troubleshoot if there's any sort of issues with any of the equipment in the studio. We've got to figure that all out. So the best way to do that is to simplify how you're putting that choreography together. And then in the back of your head, at least, you know, like, shoot, I don't remember if I was doing bicep curls or if I was doing da-da-da for my upper body, but I know upper body is next. And that gives your brain just that time to take an exhale for a moment and then regroup without your class really knowing. And that's the beauty of having these little blocks that you know and that you've planned for and that you plan around, really. The skeleton is a great thing. Whether you call it a skeleton, a template, I don't care what you call it. Whatever works for you in your brain space, and however broad or however specific that needs to be to work for you, it's very adaptable, but it's 100% easier to plan your classes, and not just to plan them, but then to truly execute them at a high level. Because at the end of the day, if you're spending time with me on these podcasts, it's because you care about your craft and you're looking for tips on how to get better at it, how to be more efficient, how to connect better with your members. And the better we are at managing our choreography and creating our choreography and knowing it, the more we can focus on those intangible pieces that really make the difference and make them want to come back class after class. So if you never thought about it before, look at the formats you teach if you're a freestyle instructor and see, do you tend to have patterns of how you put them together? And would it make sense, like, oh, this I know when I run this variation of the class, it works really well. Run with that. Make that your template. And it doesn't mean your template can't change and evolve over time. Let the template be a living creature. Let it evolve over time. But work with it and use it as a consistency and a tool for efficiency. And I guarantee the end product that you deliver in class will be remarkably better because you'll be more focused on being present and engaging with the members in your space. If you enjoyed today's episode, heck, even if you didn't, go ahead and hit that subscribe button because we have plenty more group exercise instructor development content coming your way and you want to get it while it's hot and fresh. See you next time on the Group X Files.